Morning, everyone. My name's Pete Calvert, Twitter handle Eruxpo there, and the session code is WSV312. If you're going to be on Twitter tweeting about things, hashtag WSV312. If you have questions as we go through, we have a lot of material to cover. If you post your questions to me on the Twitter stream, for those of you doing that, after the session, after I've been down at the speaker lounge, after that, for answering questions for those who aren't there, I will endeavour to go through and answer any of the questions people have through the Twitter stream. Okay? Welcome to What's New in Active Directory, Windows Server 2012. And my button's not working? When all else fails, go back to the old way. Right, the objectives for today. We have a heck of a lot of stuff to cover in Active Directory, and we can't cover it all. The objective is to give you a bit of infotainment about the stuff that's in AD 2012. Now, if anyone was in David's session just before this, he stole a little bit of my thunder, but hopefully he didn't steal the jokes. The takeaways from today, I will hope, will give you an idea of just how much stuff there is, and the slide deck. We've got quite a few people sitting up the back there, even people sitting down the front. You will notice as we go through that the slide deck has some very, very small fonts. When we get to the evaluations, in your evaluation comments, if you put down the font size was too small, it's because you weren't listening to what I was saying right now. The reason why the font size is small is because the PowerPoint deck itself is a takeaway for you. It's a reference for you to look at stuff after the session. Now, the deck was originally put together by Dean Wells, who's the Senior Program Manager for the Active Directory Group in the US. He gave this talk in the US, and apart from a few little updates, I have kept it pretty much the way that he presented it. So all the information, if there are any mistakes in it, we can blame him, not me. We're going to have a look at the various areas where we've made changes in Active Directory. We'll have a look at how things are at the moment, what problems that causes, and then what we've done to fix it. We've arranged the deck so that the stuff that is technically tricky or needs a little bit of extra explanation, we've pushed to the front, so we've got time to do that. At the end, and I don't think I've seen any of these sessions being done where we've managed to get through the whole lot in the time allotted. At the end of the deck will be the prettification things, stuff where we've added a GUI to the AD feature, stuff that when you're reading through the deck, you can easily pick up. And I don't have any demos, so if anybody's typing comments to say, where are the demos, my recommendation to you is to do your own demos. Go down to the hands-on labs. There are some What's New in Active Directory labs there where you can actually play around with a lot of this stuff yourself. Right. Yay, working. So as I said, the object of this session is to provide an overview of what's going on. This is not an introduction to AD. This is a what's new. So if any of you are new to Active Directory, you might get a little bit out of your depth here. I'm going to assume that you are already comfortable with using Active Directory for 2008 R2 and earlier, that you are already familiar with the features that are available in Active Directory 2008 R2 and earlier. Having said that, let's just do a check. How many people know what functional levels are? Okay, so in a room with about 600-700 people, I can 80% put up their hands. Fantastic. If I split that up into domain functional levels and forest functional levels, are you still with me? Most people's hands are still up. Fantastic. We had a look when Server 2012 was on the scene, coming into development. We had a look at the problem areas that people were having. And the number one ticket generating call to the customer services help desk line was on deploying Active Directory replica domain controllers. This is not a number one position that we really want to have. So one of the major goals that we wanted to do with Active Directory 2012 was to simplify the way of deploying AD. We're going to have a look at some of the areas where we can leverage this deployment of AD for both servers and in the private cloud and through the public cloud. One of the major themes for TechEd this year is being cloudy. Of course, we're on the Gold Coast, so we don't get to see too much of that. And I did hear some locals complaining that they haven't had rain for about 55 days, 56 days. Well, every time I come up to Queensland, it tends to rain. So I'm hoping that by the end of the week, we'll have some clouds rolling. One of the other major things you'll see at the bottom is the accommodation of business-driven security requirements through the integration of file classification and claims-based authorization. What that means is dynamic access control. I'm actually doing a presentation on dynamic access control on Friday in Arena 1A just before the lock note. So if you don't have to leave early, please come along for that. We do touch on that slightly during this presentation, but we'll go into a lot more detail on Friday. Maybe there's a magic spot I have to stand. Right. How many people have got domain controllers that are virtualized? Most of you. How many of you refuse to have domain controllers that are virtualized? There's a few hands up there. You're definitely in the minority now. While there still are some valid reasons for having physical domain controllers, it is now not a requirement to make sure that they're all physical. The changes that we've done and the advantages that have come through advances with Hyper-V virtualization technology now mean there's no real reason why you shouldn't virtualize your domain controllers. Bless you. Yay. Right. This is going to be our table of contents for today. So to keep track of where we're up to, we're going to follow basically this, and we'll tick off the various areas one by one. Simplified deployment. Background. It said adding replica DCs running the newer versions of Windows. So we've got, say, a 2003 environment, and we want to put in a 2008 or a 2008 R2 domain controller. Required a little bit of effort. It was time consuming, we ran into errors, and we had to run a little tool called AD Prep. How many people really enjoyed running AD Prep? All right, you guys need to see somebody. Fortunately, there's only a few hands that went up. So what you would do is you would go, I know that I need to prepare my environment for these new versions of domain controllers, this new version of Active Directory. So I run AD Prep, and I get an error. It says, this is the wrong version of AD Prep. Oh, right, it's not 32-bit anymore, it's 64-bit, so I need to run the 64-bit version. I run the 64-bit version. No, you're on the wrong machine. I'm doing a forest prep. Does anyone know which machine I need to run AD Prep, forest prep on? Need to run it on, actually for a forest prep, I need to run it on the schema master, the one that's actually got the schema master role. Because I'm actually making schema changes. So if you've got a multiple domain environment, we need to do it on the one machine that holds the schema master role, and I need to be logged on with credentials that allow me to change the schema, which normally means the enterprise admin account. So once we've got the authorization failure saying that you're using the wrong account, we need to restart it again on the right machine with the right account. I've now got my forest prepared. I need to prepare my domains. So I need to run AD prep, doing my domain prep, which needs to be on which FISMO role machine? No one? Infrastructure master. I actually need to run it on the infrastructure master role. I think we can see that this is not a really easy way of doing it. So what do? Well, we got AD, both versions. We picked them up. We took them over to the corner, the back corner. We put them in the back corner. We picked up a rifle and we shot it multiple times. And then we went over and kicked it just to make sure it was dead. And while we were at it, we're having some problems with DC Promo as well. So we're going to pick up DC Promo and go and shoot that too. Bang, bang. I didn't want to have to run another program outside of all my normal server tools in order to just get a domain controller in. Let's put the promotion of domain controllers and all the prerequisite checks and everything else into Server Manager. We want to get a new domain controller. We open up Server Manager and we say, give me a new domain controller. Give it to me in a new forest, or it's a new domain, and by the way, go off and check all the prerequisites for me. If you need to run it on another machine, go and run it on another machine. If you need other credentials, pop up a box. Don't expect me to have to go and start the whole thing again. What are we going to call this? We could call it the Windows Server 2012 Active Directory Domain Services Roles and Features Installation Wizard, but that's a little bit of a mouthful. So what we did is we said, DC Promo, I'm just going to take your headstone over here because we're taking your name and we're going to reuse it again. So we've actually called the promotion tool, the script that it runs. It's a set of PowerShell scripts, DC Promo. It's not the same as the old DC Promo now. It's completely changed. Leave those things to go moldy and buried in the corner. So we've streamlined the deployment process by making sure that everything is now in one place with all the prerequisites taken care of. We've minimized the odds of this failure by checking all the prerequisites beforehand. We've minimized the number of touch points by making the script go off and execute these things on the right servers rather than us having to go and get onto those right servers. We've managed to make sure that the deployment paths that we need to take are a lot more aligned with the configurations that we're trying to put into place, we're trying to deploy. And we've got consistency now. The same process you go through for doing it on a local machine, you do it on a remote machine, you do it on something in a private cloud, you do it on something in the public cloud, now that we can have domain controllers running in Azure. And what we have also done is moved a lot of this sort of stuff into the Active Directory Administration Center. Is anybody actually using the Active Directory Administration Center? Virtually no hands. Does anybody know what the Active Directory Administration Center is? We have a few hands come up. This is a new Active Directory administration tool that is actually customizable. It leverages Active Directory web services for connecting to things, and it is almost now as good as Active Directory users and computers. You can almost do everything that it can do. It's getting better. But being a web-based tool, being customizable, we can actually have cut-down versions of it for your lower-level admins so they don't get exposed to a lot of extra information. But it is worth checking out if you haven't done so already. The requirements, Windows Server 2012. Target forest must be Windows Server 2003 functional level or greater. Notice that we do not have a requirement for AD functional level at 2012. As we go through, you will see that for all of this stuff, we do not have a requirement for any AD functional level of 2012. The company that I'm working for at the moment, we've been doing an Active Directory upgrade. We're upgrading to 2008 R2, and we hit a stumbling block. our domain controllers are running 2008 R2, and we went to bump up the forest functional level so we could get some of the new fantastic stuff, well, new 4 years ago fantastic stuff, that was in 2008 R2. And we couldn't, because there was another application that wasn't supported by its vendor in anything above functional level 2008. Yes, they supported it on server 2008 R2. They didn't support the functional level, the AD functional level 2008 R2. If it was just Microsoft, it would have been fine. But I actually live in the real world. And in the real world, we have other vendors that we need to deal with. We're not putting that burden on you anymore. Now we're saying if it supports server 2012, you can have these AD functionalities. When we're doing the testing, we did run into a little problem, and this was when we were doing the testing of promoting domain controllers in Windows Azure. There was a Project Brooklyn which created a VPN tunnel from Windows Azure back to our local systems, and we were doing promotions of the domain controllers over this VPN tunnel. And we ran into, we ran into a DC promo retry failure. So we investigated. We had a look at what was going on. And do you know what? There was no retries. In fact, if you go back to AD 2000, where these errors would first come in over really intermittent networks, it would still come up with a DC promo retry failure. And once again, we found out it wasn't actually retrying. It's actually a timeout. It would sit there and go, I can't connect anymore. I'm going to go and sulk. So what we've done instead with 2012 is we've said, all right, let's actually make retries work. So if there is an intermittent network problem, or we're having issues trying to promote a remote domain controller over a WAN link, we will retry. And we will retry. And how often will we retry? Well, we're giving that choice to you. Let's face it, if you've got a huge DIT file that you're trying to copy over the wire to a remote domain controller to promote it, and it's taking several days to do it, you want to have those several days to do it. It'll sit there and continually retry and retry and retry and retry and retry until you go cancel and you get sick of it. Is anyone actually using Install from Media? Okay, there's a smattering of hands up. Install from Media is where we don't want to copy a whopping huge DIT file across the wire. We've got a remote domain controller that we want to DC promo up. And we know that the major component, the major delay that's going to happen is when it says, right, give me a copy of the DIT file. Give me a copy of the database. And it tries to drag this whopping huge file across the WAN link in competition with all the other stuff that's going on. So we said, right, what we can do is we can package up the DIT file and we can send it across on a DVD or USB or however we want to do it and put it on that local machine. And now, when it installs, it will go, right, I'm going to install from the media here. I've got my local copy of the database and I'm going to use that in order to tell me what's actually in the directory. It's pretty cool. Yep. There's a problem. We found that when we did that, it goes, install from media, this is somebody else's file. I'm getting secondhand information here. They've been inefficient. I'm going to perform an offline defragmentation of the directory database here before I use it. Does anyone perform an offline defragmentation of the AD database? Hands up. Right, some people are obviously into pain. All right, it was an enjoyable experience. Why? AD already does online defragmentation. Online defragmentation inside the AD database takes all the bits and pieces and tries to make them contiguous and leaves a lot of white space at the end. So we might have a 5 gigabyte DIT file of which all of our information is here and then there's white space there. Don't worry, AD is going to fill it up eventually. The offline defragmentation essentially says, right, we take this file, and instead of being 5 gigs with 2 gigs or 3 gigs worth of white space, I'm just going to shrink it back down to 2 gigs, and we go from there. The only real reason for doing offline defragmentations is if your domain controllers are running out of disk space. If your domain controllers are running out of disk space, I think you have bigger problems than doing an offline defragmentation of your DIT file. So what we've done now is we've now got a switch. When we do install from media, we can say, don't do an offline defrag. The only connection that it actually needs to make now back across the wire is to talk to another domain controller to put its new account as a domain controller account under the DC's OU. And the other thing it does is to work out whereabouts it is in the replication topology. So which other machines do I need to talk to in order to get changes, and which ones are going to talk to me to get my changes. Unfortunately, because this would actually be a regression and the testers at Microsoft didn't like regressing things, they said, we can't change the default behavior. So while it would have been really nice to, by default, not do offline defrags, by default it will, and you need to pop a switch in to say, no, no, I don't want to do an offline defrag. And what this can do is it can save you, on a normal size DIT file, 6 hours. We've actually seen some offline defrags take up to 48 hours to do for particularly large DIT files. If you're using ADFS, ADFS 2.0 was an out-of-band download that you had to put in. ADFS 2.1 is exactly the same as ADFS 2.0, except now it is available out of the box. It actually ships with Windows Server 2012, and it is also claims-based aware. Your ADFS server, instead of having to get your claim, your Kerberos ticket in, crack it open, and then go back and talk to AD to find out some more information that's already in the Kerberos ticket in order to convert the Kerberos claim into a SAML claim, it just gets the Kerberos claim, has a look at it, all the information is in there, converts it into a SAML claim, ADFS works. Makes it a lot simpler. Right. This is some of the thunder that David stole from me in the session before. USN rollbacks. We've got a bit of a different crowd here. Could I have hands up, show... Who one knows what a USN rollback is? If you're in my session last year, you should definitely know what that is. There's about 10% of the hands go up. Keep your hands up if you've had a USN rollback. I'm sorry. About 3 of you have done it. A USN rollback is a situation where the clock inside Active Directory. Now, this isn't a clock that ticks regularly with time. This is a clock that always goes forwards depending upon changes that are being made. AD is based on the fact that things don't suddenly jump back in time. With virtualization technology now, and this was one of the reasons why we needed to be careful about having virtualized domain controllers, was it is now very easy to take a snapshot of a running, working domain controller, take a copy of the VHD, put it on a shelf, and then when our domain controller goes belly up, take that VHD, attach it back to a VM, and off we go. The domain controller has actually been rolled back in time and has made changes that it's unaware that it's actually made. So this is the worst case scenario where we don't actually know that we've had a USN rollback. For example, time one, we snapshot the running DC. At the moment, its USN is at 100. Its invocation ID, this is its identity. This is how it knows who it is. When it's looking through the Active Directory database, it can see who initiated any of the changes in it by looking at the invocation ID that's attached to it. We'll call it A. And its current RID pool. RIDs are relative IDs. These are the bits that distinguish different identities within our database from the other security principles. Let's say that we've got from 500 to 1,000. Those of you who are going, hang on, why has he still got 500? This is just an example. Time goes on. We've made some changes. We've actually created another 100 security principles, or at least made changes to them. These could be password changes. They could be other changes. We have replicated those changes across to the other domain controller. It knows, the other domain controller knows, that we're up to 200. And then we have a problem. DC1 goes belly up, we take the snapshot, we apply the snapshot to the virtual machine, and it comes back online and it says, right, I'm at 100, my invocation ID is A, my RID pool is starting at 500, I've got some changes coming in, I'm going to start making things happen. It creates 150 more security principles. Then, when the other DC comes to talk to it and says, last time I talked to you, I got up to 200. Can you give me everything above 200? It goes, sure, I've actually got 50 of those, and sends those 50 off. What happens to the first 100 that it did? It's the only one that knows about them. It's got its own little secret store of information that doesn't share with anybody else because everybody else thinks it's already got those. We end up having security principles with duplicate RIDs in the environment. This is not a good situation. The solution. How can we make sure that the domain controller knows that it's been rolled back? Well, the best way of doing it is to actually use some backup and restore technology that is AD aware. Microsoft have it, Quest, there's a number of other big players that have got AD aware restore technology, and these products, when they restore a domain controller, they will make sure that when the domain controller comes back up, it's aware that it's been rolled back, and it will reset its invocation ID and do a few other things. But it doesn't help us in those small shops where there is a very helpful hypervisor admin who sees there is a problem with this server and doesn't really want to wake up the domain admins and let them know what's been going on. Says, we can just go back to something that's work. Oh, I've got a snapshot here. I'll roll back. The solution in 2012 actually has a requirement of running on a hypervisor that is able to be aware of the VM generation ID. This is a new number. What happens is when a VM is created or rolled back, so in other words, when there is a change to the image that's attached to a virtual machine, the hypervisor will generate a number, and it stores this in a VM generation ID, and it exposes that number through the API tables, through the BIOS. So when the guest machine is up and running, it can have a look at those tables and can read this number. And it takes a copy of that number and it puts that number into its database, into the AD database, under its own details. And whenever it goes to do a write, and whenever it first comes up and starts up AD, it has a look at that number in the ACPI tables and has a look and compares that with the number it's got in its database. And if those numbers match, it goes, cool, let's continue on. If those numbers are different, though, it goes, hang on, this shouldn't be happening. Something has changed, and I'm not aware of it, which means I've been rolled back, and no one's told me. Fortunately, we now have a mechanism for doing that. What it does is it goes, right, if I've been rolled back, then I might well have already used some of the RIDs that I've been given. I don't want to use them again. I'll discard that. Get rid of my RID pool. Second, the code that I've been using to tag things as myself, I can't trust that anymore because people might know stuff that I don't that's marked with my ID. Do you reckon in AD replication, if I'm a domain controller and I'm talking to another domain controller and it has stuff that it thinks it's gotten from me that I'm going to get it back? No. So I reset my invocation ID. And what I do is I double check all the FSMO roles. So did I have a particular FSMO role? Has it been seized? Has it been moved to somewhere else? I'll make sure that I've got my details up to date from other people. The requirements. Needs to be a 2012 DC. We can't backport this to 2008 R2 DCs. And we must be running on a hypervisor platform that supports VM generation ID. Now, as at the moment, I'm aware of only one hypervisor that supports VM generation ID. But there are some other companies out there that do some pretty good hypervisors, and Microsoft have given them all the specifications and details required in order to be able to implement VM generation ID. And we've been told that those companies will be supporting it in their next releases, whenever those will be. So keep your eyes tuned, but at the moment, if you're wanting to do it when you walk out here today, to be able to implement VM generation ID, needs to be on Hyper-V. Now, we just mentioned some of the problems with snapshotting and rolling back DCs. This sometimes leads to problems with disaster recovery situations where we have some old snapshots, we have some old copies of DCs there, and we've had a disaster, we've lost our AD environment, or we've lost most of our AD environment, and we need to get it back, and we need to get it back in a hurry. So if you don't already have a disaster recovery plan, if you don't have plans based around business continuity, then you're going to run yourselves into problems. And this was a big issue, particularly around some of these things about USN rollbacks. So what we've done with Server 2012 and AD is to actually provide a way for rapidly deploying, rapidly provisioning domain controllers by cloning them. But hang on, you said, wasn't cloning domain controllers a bad thing? It was using the older versions. We're now in a brave new world, AD 2012. So the solution, we have a DC. We've actually managed to either get a backup of a DC and one backup and running, or we've still got a DC that actually works. We take that DC and we make sure it's got the PDC emulator role. This is important. We then run some PowerShell scripts on that DC, make sure that it knows that it's able to be cloned. And what it does is it pops it into a group called the clonable DCs group. We can then shut it down, we take a copy of that hard drive, we copy it however many times we want, and we attach that copy to new VMs. We've set up the new virtual machines, added that virtual hard disk to them, boot them up. When they boot up, provided they are running on a hypervisor that supports VM generation ID, these machines will go, hang on, my invocation ID is different from the one that's in my database. Something's happened. It then does another check. Now, I didn't mention this check in the last section, but it still does it. It's just there was nothing there to find. Now it finds that there's actually a config file to say, you are a cloned DC. Oh, I'm a clone. I don't have to wear the fancy white armor, and I don't have to shoot really badly, but I do need to go and talk to the PDC emulator. So we step through the process. We have a look at our VM generation ID. We find it is different. Because it's different, we go, all right, I need to reset my invocation ID, discard the RID pool that I've got, and then have a look at the dcclone config.xml file. Is it there? If it is, great. I'm a clone. I'm a copy. I'm somebody else's stooge. I'm not myself. I need to fix that. So I'm going to do a dc promo/fix clone. Now, the fix clone here isn't like fixing things at the vet. What it does is it actually makes some changes to say, right, I'm going to promote myself, but I'm not going to use the settings that are in here. I'm going to use some new settings that are specific to me. I'm going to parse the DC clone config file, configure my network settings, locate the PDC emulator, and then make a call to it. Once I've made a call to it, it's going to check that I am actually allowed to be a clone. This is to stop people grabbing a copy of the file, banging it on their own machines, and putting their own machines up there. It says, yes, you are. I will put your details that you have done in your DC promo slash fix clone. Remember, this isn't the old DC promo. This is a new DC promo. I'm going to put this in the directory database and send that back to you to say, yes, you are all good. We're going to now save the new state, the new name, password, everything else that the PDC emulator has told us that we are now. We promote ourselves as a replica using install from media. We run the sysprep process. Now, there are about 60 different sysprep providers that we needed to check whether they would be impacted. And of those 60, there are about 7 that actually had an impact on domain controller promotion. One of those, for example, was DHCP. DHCP needs to be sysprepped because otherwise it can give you the same UID for your IPv6 addresses. So while we might have changed the IPv4 settings, we could end up with a state, if we hadn't done this, of having multiple domain controllers who all think they are in the same link, got the same link local address for IPv6. Once we've got all these things checked off, we know that we're all happy, we're all good, we restart, and we've got a replica domain controller. We've got a new domain controller that's up and running, all perfectly fine. This process, by the way, we can get 9 to 10 domain controller copies up within about 2 to 3 minutes. Just depends on how fast your hardware is. Disaster recovery scenarios, this is really good, this is really useful. It's also useful for cloud provisioning, where we might want to provision a whole stack of domain controllers for particular purposes at particular times in a cloud environment, that elasticity of demand. And we can do that using this process, once again, providing that we're using DCs that are running 2012. Said the requirements, 2012 domain controllers, virtual. It's a bit hard to do this with their physical domain controllers. And a hypervisor that supports VM generation ID. Okay, some platform changes. Just some definitions of things first. The reason why I'm going through these is because these do appear in the slide deck. You can look them up and investigate the time, but just to make sure we're all on the same page. Root DSC mods. A root DSC mod is any change that occurs at the root level in Active Directory. So if you open up LDP or any of the other tools to connect to the actual Active Directory tree, and you go right up to the top, anything that has to make a change right at the top level, that's a root DSC mod. Constructed attributes are just about the reverse of that. A constructed attribute doesn't actually appear in the directory. A constructed attribute is something that we construct from stuff that's in the directory. An example of this would be token groups. In your Kerberos token, you have a list of the security IDs of the groups that you belong to. That list doesn't actually exist anywhere in Active Directory. What it does is it goes and investigates your account and then checks the groups that you are a member of and then goes and gets those SIDs and then tallies up the SIDs, packages them all together, and then pops them into what's called a token group and pops that into your SID, into your access token. We have LDAP controls and matching rules. LDAP controls is where we want to do something with a search or do something with an LDAP query that might be wanting to change the way that behaves. For example, there is a deleted objects container inside Active Directory. If you're doing a search against Active Directory, do you normally want to see the stuff that's in deleted objects? No. So what we would do is we would use an LDAP control to say, by the way, include deleted objects in my query. Another one is the matching rules. Matching rules allows us to take a value from AD and then suck bits out of it. An example of this would be UAC. UAC actually is a string of numbers, and each of those numbers represents something. So if we're wanting to do a check against specific things about what UAC is allowing or not allowing, we can actually use a matching rule to say, check the UAC value, but we're really only interested in the value of one or a few of those bits. Finally, some other terms, RIDs, relative IDs. This is a question. Does anyone know how many relative IDs we can have in a domain? Call out the number if you think you know. 2^32 - 500, not quite. There is a lot, absolutely. It's actually 2^30, which is close enough to about a billion. We'll talk about RIDs in a little bit more detail, but we've definitely exposed some of the RID stuff and the RID changes inside Active Directory. Another one is distinguished name tags. We'll cover that in another slide a little bit later. But this is now exposed in Windows Server 2012, whereas it wasn't previously. One thing that isn't exposed, it's still kept below the covers, is linked value IDs. Linked value IDs are used if we have attributes inside Active Directory that are bigger than 8K. There are 8K pages inside the JET database, and if we want to be able to string that attribute together to package it all up to bring it back as one complete thing, we use the linked value IDs in order to be able to reconstruct that. So far, we haven't seen anybody having problems with this, so we haven't decided to expose that. But RIDs. 1 billion RIDs we can have. You think you wouldn't run out. Guess what? We've had a series of cases recently where people have actually run out of RIDs. Think, my God, what are these people doing? Right. We thought running out of IPv4 addresses was bad. How the hell can somebody use up 1 billion RIDs? Well, there's a couple of issues that we found which have actually been fixed. So one of these is if you decide to create an account and it fails. For example, you don't have account manager privileges or you don't have domain admin privileges. What it will do is it will take a RID, it'll take the details from you, it'll ask you for all the details, and when you click OK, it'll go, sorry, you don't have these permissions, access denied. But guess what, I've used the RID. So it just drops it. And you go and try and do it again, because you shouldn't have failed the first time. I'll pick up another RID. I'll create all the user details, this is all good, fantastic, and oh, by the way, you don't have permissions. And then you go, that's because I'm not running as admin. I need to change account. I've still lost two RIDs. Even worse if I'm trying to import a big LDF file or CSVDE file. I'm using a RID for each of those. No, fail, sorry, drop them all, bang, they're gone, go on to the next lot. Or if the user tries to add a computer to the domain and they don't have the privileges for doing that, once again, it will pick up a RID, it will try and use that RID to do the work, fail, drops the RID, gone. These are only small things though. These shouldn't be causing us to burn through 1 billion RIDs too quickly. The other way for burning through RIDs, remember we talked before about the USN rollbacks and what happens when a domain controller realizes that it's been rolled back. What did it do? It dropped its RID pool. So it might have quite a few still sitting there unused, can't use them anymore, bang, dropped. There is a bigger problem though. We did find that there is a situation where if you have a domain controller that you've DC promoted down, and then you reincarnate it, you promote it back up again. When you promote it back up, it goes and talks to the RID master and it says, right, I'm now a domain controller, I need some RIDs, give me some RIDs. And by default, it'll get 500. It says, those 500 RIDs, I'm going to store here. Bang. But because it's been reincarnated, there's been a bug that stopped the ID set reference value from being set. And it goes, I'll put these here and where'd they go? I'll go and get 500. And I'll put them down here.
and I'll go and set the, it's not there, where'd they go? I'll go and get 500. And it is possible actually to burn through a billion RIDs in about 2 years doing it that way. Now what we've enabled you to do is to actually say, you know what, there are some places that might be over a WAN link or separated, and we don't want to have to keep going back to the RID master to ask for more IDs. You can actually increase the number of RIDs that you request. So let's say I ask for 1 million RIDs in a block. I can now burn through 1 million at a time. I can burn through that billion even quicker than I could before. So we said, okay, this is a bit of a problem. We found the bug, we fixed it, and we also said, you know what, we don't think you really should be taking 1 million RIDs at a time. We're going to set a cap here, and the cap is at 15,000. You can't grab more than 15,000 RIDs now in one block. If you try and put a bigger number in, it won't work, it'll still be 1,500. How many of you think that you have got good AD monitoring in place? Are there any hands that go up? No, someone's scratching themselves. Okay. I think it's pretty much across the board. How do we know that we're burning through all these RIDs? How do we know there is a problem? We often know there's a problem when all of a sudden things start breaking, we can't create accounts anymore. So what we're doing now is we're going to say, okay, once 10% of the RID space has been used, this is 10% of a billion, so that's 100 million RIDs have been used, we're going to set a warning. We're going to put an event in the event log. And we're going to say, by the way, you've used 10% of your RIDs. And then at 10% of the remaining 900,000, so another 90 million, we're going to put another warning in the event log. And us as admins are going to ignore it. And then we'll do this again and again and again. We're increasing in frequency here. As we become more and more depleted, the events will increase. And because they're just warnings, because they're not errors, we're just going to ignore them. So we're going to break it. We've actually put a ceiling in this RID allocation. We're going to say that, okay, the top level is a billion. Once you get to 900 million, we're going to say no more. We're going to say, no, sorry, you failed to create this user. We've failed to create this computer account. We've failed to create this group. Why would we break things? To get people's attention. We still actually have another 100 million left. Now, 100 million security principles should give you a heck of a lot of time in order to be able to do stuff. What we're actually doing is identifying that there is a problem. We can overcome this soft ceiling by flipping a switch. We flip the switch, we've now got 100 million more, but because we've got your attention, because you don't have good AD monitoring in place, we've now forced your attention on the fact that you have a serious issue. And the fact that you've been able to burn through 900 million RIDs in however much time it is, in short space of time, means that those other 100 million are going to go very, very quickly unless you do something about it. Another thing we've done. There are actually 32 bits that are used for the RID. Two of them aren't normally touched. The 31st bit was actually reserved for a special case. And that special case is to identify migrated accounts from NetWare. We actually do have other mechanisms now for identifying migrated accounts from NetWare, but this is a legacy thing. Now, I don't know about you, but in the last, 5-6 years, I don't think I've seen much in the way of migrations from NetWare to Active Directory. Right. So this bit is sitting there twiddling its thumbs most of the time. What we can now do is we can go, you know, that bit that's not actually being used because we're not actually going to be migrating anything from NetWare. And even if we were, we're going to have other ways of being able to find out what's going on. We'll use that. I've doubled my RID space. I've now got 2 billion RIDs that I can have, as if 1 billion wasn't enough. All right. There is a caveat about this. While we can use that extra bit for creating new security principles, they can only be created on Windows 2012 domain controllers. Down level ones, 2008, 2008 R2, can still authenticate against those security IDs. They just can't create them or make changes to them. Okay. Deferred index creation. This is a situation that we found where if you want to extend the schema and there are attributes inside the schema that are already populated and you now want to index on them, you're going to hit your domain controllers. This was a request from the Exchange Online team who said, when we put Exchange in, we need to make schema extensions. And there are some attributes that we've already got in Active Directory that we now want to be able to index on. Guess what? All the domain controllers put down tools, go down and start resorting their index. Sure, you want a request? Hang on. Authentication? Quick, there you go. All right. What we can do now is we can flip a switch, flip a bit, and say, right, if you need to do some re-indexing of an attribute that already has values in it, you can now wait until either the next time you restart or alternatively the next time you need to write something to that attribute. If you need to write something to that attribute, if you need to make a change to that attribute, that is now the time to do your re-indexing. And what this will do is it will spread out that workload on your domain controllers. It won't do this if it's a new attribute. If it's a new attribute, it will index it like that, or if it's an attribute that doesn't have any values in it. Why? Because indexing an empty list is pretty damn quick. Distinguished name tags. Distinguished name tags is another issue that we've started to see could be a problem. If you imagine that each of the identities inside your Active Directory database was a line in a spreadsheet, and the row numbers are the distinguished name tags, and we can actually have two to the power of 31, so about 2 billion rows. All right. If you have a domain controller that's been creating, deleting, creating, deleting, creating, deleting, you might only have a few, you know, 100,000 or so security principles, but your DNTs might have actually grown to be significantly bigger. The fix for doing this is actually to be able to de-promote the domain controller and then re-promote it again over the wire. It needs to be over the wire so it can pull each of the objects from Active Directory and recreate its spreadsheet. If you do it from install from media, it's going to be using that old copy which still had all the DNTs in it and all the blank rows. Right. This is why we've now exposed these DNTs to you. So you can actually do some queries and find out what's my DNT level, am I actually getting close to something, and if I am, then the process is depromote, repromote. Has anyone used an offline domain join at all? Hands up. No one's used offline domain join? Okay, offline domain join was a technology that was used to get machines at branch offices connected to the domain if they didn't have a local domain controller. What we would do is we'd say, okay, this machine, we want to be able to connect it to the domain, be able to log on using domain, get a domain account. There's no domain controller there. It's an intermittent WAN connection. Our domain controller can create the computer account, create a blob. We take that blob, we go and put it on that remote machine. It starts up, connects to the domain by looking at the blob and seeing all of the credentials it needs in order to be able to connect to where the domain controller is. Right. This is really good if you have a branch office environment where you can do this.
But we're wanting to extend that to the situation where you've got people out there who aren't connected to any particular network, and we want a domain-connected machine. So we've extended that to off-premises domain join. Now, off-premises domain join combines direct access with offline domain joins. The scenario is now where a user can go and buy whatever machine they want or have a machine that's been provisioned for them from out of the box, out of a hardware store or something like that. They connect up, they install, do whatever, they connect up to the internet, they go to a website. The website is now where we store that blob. They download the blob, they run it, it now connects them using direct access back into the domain. They don't actually have to be anywhere where our infrastructure, our network infrastructure is, in order to be able to be domain connected. Right. This is pretty good, particularly in break fix scenarios where somebody is out there in the field and can't actually get into an office to do stuff. Okay. Imagine the scenario if we're going to be going in a cloud environment where we've got Windows Azure domain controllers. We expose those domain controllers to the blobs into a website, and then we'd be able to connect up to that website, pull down, then connect to these cloud-connected domain controllers. The only thing stopping us at the moment is being able to have that IPsec tunnel that direct access requires from the virtual IP addresses of the Azure, Windows Azure domain controllers, but that's something that's being pushed very hard by the Active Directory group in Redmond. Quickly and conscious of time, connected accounts. Some of you might have already played with Windows 8. Hands up, anyone played with Windows 8? You logged on using your live IDs or a network ID. We've got quite a few hands come up. We now have actually the ability to connect our live IDs or our Microsoft IDs with our domain IDs. We now have the ability to synchronize our settings, our live settings, our personal settings that we use outside of the office with our ones inside the office. Very important, server SKUs do not support this. In other words, you won't be logging onto a server using your live ID. I'm sorry if any of you thought that you might have been able to do that. This is all going forwards as far as the across device experience that Microsoft are wanting to look at, where it doesn't matter what device you want that you're on, whether it's a phone, whether it's a tablet or slate, or whether it's a desktop. Your personal experience, your access to applications, your settings is going to be the same across the board, whether you're logged onto the domain or logged onto something that's not domain connected. Watch this space. We've also done some enhanced LDAP loggings. This is to improve the speed at which the queries can return results. And that's a reference slide, and we will quickly flip through in the time remaining some of the new stuff. Recycle bin. Is there anybody who's actually implemented the recycle bin? Hands up. Only a few hands. Those hands up if you've actually got AD2008 R2 running. All right, those of you who've got your hands up now and didn't put it up before, why haven't you got the recycle bin in place? Do you actually like doing authoritative restores? Yeah. All right. Maybe one of the reasons why you don't have the recycle bin in place was because you had to get to the command line. You had to put in PowerShell commands to do things. Well, guess what? We've now got a GUI. We can access it all through the GUI. Dynamic access control, I'm going to be talking about this on Friday. The main reason around dynamic access control is to leverage the file classification infrastructure that was brought into place in 2008 R2 that nobody uses. Why? Because it's too hard. Because it's machine specific. And sort of wrap it up in a central way of deploying business rules to our file stores. One of the issues that I've actually seen happen in the US a fair bit is what's called token bloat. Are there any organizations here that are suffering from token bloat? Hands up. Okay, we've got actually quite a few hands that have come up here. Maybe 10%. Token bloat is where you're in too many groups. Your Kerberos token gets too big, it can't fit anymore. We'll see with dynamic access control, we can dramatically reduce the number of groups that we need to use in order to manage security of our files and folders.
This is the Microsoft solution for getting around token bloat. You can increase the size, but that's just delaying the problem, not actually fixing it. All right, so we have some details there on dynamic access control. It doesn't actually require you to be using a 2012 domain controller. All you need is actually a Windows server running 2012 in order to be able to implement this. Kerberos claims, we've actually done some changes to that so that, as I said before, we can now do claims-based aware, Kerberos claims-based aware for Federation services. And actually just, it's a bit hard to see in the slide here, but because this is a reference, you can look at it afterwards. There is a compound ID that must be switched on in order to be able to do this. Because we're doing claims, we want to be able to have the ability to get the user's claims and the machine that they're actually connecting from. A compound ID takes the computer's details and the user's details and puts them together to give us a compound ID. We might decide that from an access perspective, we only want to give people access to these resources if they're doing it from this subset of machines or these machines that are in a secure location. Active Directory-based activation. I know that there are some people that really love using key management services. I don't like to socialize with those people. Two reasons. One is they tend to be a lot smarter than me in that licensing area, and two, I don't like talking about licensing. But Active Directory-based application means that we can now take 2012 servers and Windows 8 clients, and just by connecting them to Active Directory, it can activate the accounts. I think that's a really good idea, isn't it? We can't do this for down-level stuff, so they can coexist. So as we're starting to bring in 2012 Windows 8 clients, they can do the AD-based application while you can still use your KMS server for the old stuff. PowerShell history viewer, David showed this in the last session. What we're doing in the Active Directory Administration Center is now exposing the PowerShell commands that are used to do the tasks that we need to do. So we can now see, and there are comments and note blocks that are attached to this as well, so it's a little bit better than the Exchange version of the PowerShell viewer. As we do stuff, up in the top, up in the GUI, we can see the PowerShell commands that are actually being generated. So if you want to build some scripts or just learn PowerShell a little bit easier, this is a fantastic way of being able to get your head around what's actually happening with the PowerShell commands. Another reason to have a look at the Active Directory Administration Center. Fine-grained password policies. These, once again, were introduced with Server 2008 and allowed us to have multiple password policies per domain. Previous to that, you could only have one password policy per domain. If you wanted to have different password policies, you needed multiple domains. Is anybody using fine-grained password policies? We have only about 5% of the hands going up. That's probably a few more than I would have thought. The difficulty based around that is you need to be using command line tools or cracking into ADSI Edit or things like that to be able to create things. It was a little bit of a struggle to be able to set things up. Fantastic once we had things going. Well, we've now got a GUI for it. It shows us all the stuff that we need to do in order to be able to create fine-grained password policies. There is now no excuse. Those of you who are in multiple domain environments where you're using multiple domains because you needed to have multiple password policies moving forwards, that's all good. We do need to be running at 2008 domain functional level in order to be able to support the fine-grained password policies. But that's it. Some Kerberos enhancements. Apologies to anybody who is in the SharePoint search space. I don't know why. I think it was just somebody who thought, how can we piss off another team by pinching an acronym that they're already using? The idea behind this is to get around the man-in-the-middle of attacks that can occur with Kerberos tokens. Essentially, what we're unable to do is to form a tunnel between the client and the Kerberos key distribution center to secure the key exchange. And the way it does that is by picking up the password that the computer account used in order to do its Kerberos authentication. It then uses that to create a secure tunnel for the user authentication. Kerberos constrained delegation. This is where you have an account that needs to be impersonated in order to be able to access a service. Previously, we had limited that to just one domain. We can now extend that to cross-domain and even cross-forest. Is anyone using managed service accounts? Hands up. Well, hardly any hands, only a handful of hands. Managed service accounts enabled us to create an account inside Active Directory that could be used for services. Now, the problem from an admin perspective with service accounts, with accounts that are used for managing applications or services or things like that, is that we'd often set the password does not expire. Because there's a real pain in the neck to have to go and remember to reset the passwords or change the passwords on all of these different accounts every time we needed to reset them or change them. Managed service accounts allowed us to create an account that used the computer account changing procedures and used the computer account 196 white byte space length password, really long passwords, maximum entropy passwords for these accounts. There was a problem with this though. If you created a managed service account, which was really, really nice for passing security audits in saying that we did not have accounts anymore, service accounts often with admin privileges that, that didn't change their password, now they could, those managed service accounts could only be used on one computer. You could use those accounts on multiple services on that computer, but only on that one computer. We now have group managed service accounts. Group managed service accounts means we can now have a managed service account that can be used on multiple computers, as many as you want. The only caveat, the servers have to be running 2012. And replication commandlets. There is a whole slew of new things that are happening with the PowerShell commandlets. We'll go on with PowerShell. I think, you know, the mantra for the developers is developers, developers, developers. Are you sick and tired of the mantra for the IT pros being PowerShell, PowerShell, PowerShell? No one's sick of that? Cool, okay. Microsoft are doing their job. Well done. PowerShell is still underpinning everything. We're wanting to make sure that we've got a consistent experience between the GUI and the command line. So the commandlets that are being used and being developed, being extended, some of you might be using the Quest AD commandlets, PowerShell commandlets. Microsoft aren't wanting to compete necessarily with those, but are wanting to get at least the functionality of the AD things, tools that are being used, exposed out of the box. And finally, and so that you've got 5 minutes left to get out and stretch your legs, this is a slide which sort of summarizes all the stuff that we've talked about and what you need to make it happen. Once you have one Windows Server 2012 domain member, this is not a domain controller, this is a domain member, or you have a Windows 8 machine with the remote server administration tools installed, you get the new AD Administrative Center. You get the rich authorization through dynamic access control and file classification infrastructure. You get Active Directory-based activation, although you do require some schema extensions to be done. You do get ADFS 2.1. Once you have a domain controller that's running 2012, you get the simplified deployment and preparation. You get the policies and claims for dynamic access control, cross-domain Kerberos constrained delegation, group managed service accounts, and the virtualization safe, provided you are running on a hypervisor that has got VM generation ID capabilities. If you manage to put the PDC emulator role on that 2012 domain controller, you will also get the ability to do the rapid provisioning of domain controllers. There are a stack of slides in here for your bedtime pleasure, particularly if you're having trouble getting to sleep. And I will ask that please fill out evaluations. Now, just to be clear, there have been issues in the past. One is bad, five is good. If you go 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, really great session, it doesn't really help. And if you do want to put in comments, I really do value the comments, the feedback that you guys can give. I do go through it. Microsoft does go through it. And my ability to get back here again next year is probably going to be very dependent upon your evals. And I really hope you do win a Touch Mouse. There are far more resources. In fact, there is a TechNet page specifically on what's new in Active Directory 2012. I am actually in the Server War Stories live panel on Thursday. And please tweet that you want to take a ride in the Windows Server 2012 helicopter. All you need to do is on Twitter, make sure you're using hashtag WinServe and hashtag WinServeHeli and hashtag AUTechEd and give a good reason. And with that, thank you very much.